It's Mike Shope.
It's nothing you did.
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's you, but you didn't cross me.
And the Bulldog.
Why did I choose? Why did I just stay in school?
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I was just sitting here again feeling jealous of Brad. You know, I don't have to be in every draft. Mike, you don't have to be in every draft. But so much of what I do is online, and it's like tournament stuff, higher stakes, go to Vegas. Even my own league, the League of Shopes and Dreams, if you don't know, this year I missed the draft. It felt like a jumping the shark moment for me with that league. I hate to say it, and I don't intend for it to be, but I had to be, listen to me. I was at my son's lacrosse clinic that day out of town and couldn't go. And, you know, he's going to be a senior in high school. Like, we're in that moment where it's especially important to do as much of that as we can. And, you know, for all the I's to be dotted and the T's to be crossed. And so I missed my league draft, and that did not feel good. So good for Brad. An auction draft in Saratoga. He's been going for 27 years. That's nice. That's a great tradition. With me now on the West Her Hotline is our guy in Denver, Benjamin Albright, KOA Colorado. Ben, you good? I hope we're not putting any sort of extra stress into your life by bugging you today.
No, it's been a fascinating day here for me personally, but I'm glad to be on board with you.
If you want to say anything, go ahead. I mean, it's in this world, maybe it does get back to you, but I don't know. Like, if you want to vent, you certainly should feel free.
I don't even know what to vent. I mean, the parking garage in my apartment complex, it sort of collapsed, and I don't even know what you do with that, really. That's just it's been one of those days.
I guess you just park somewhere else and, you know, wait for security or wait for repairs, I guess. I don't know. Tough one.
Yeah.
I guess the best you can do. So, Benjamin, here we go into 2026. The Bills and Broncos, having met in the playoffs each of the last 2 years, have Broncos fans, yourself, everybody there, kind of settled into a new reality that these guys are like a contender and you have high standards there now?
I think the fan base certainly has. The bar is far higher than it was when Sean Payton got here. The bar is now set at excellence. I think the fans around here are looking at this team as a contender. I think the team feels it's a contender. I think there's been a growth of confidence to the point where, you know, last year they were winning a lot of those games with last second comebacks, and last year they sort of had this mentality that they could hang with anybody. I think they're coming into this year more with a hunter's approach, like we can't just hang with anybody, we can beat anybody, and I think that's where they sit right now.
Teams tend to like it when they feel slighted, and maybe the Broncos have a little bit of that with there being the it's just one manifestation of it, perhaps the third choice in the betting markets in the AFC West. Maybe a little bit of what do we have to do? Okay, Kansas City, I get it, but the Chargers too. That's a little weird for me, given the year Denver just had.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I don't, that has not been a consistent talking point around here, but I do think that that's certainly felt. I think that everybody, you know, here at Denver kind of says, well, hey, look, we think we're a contender. We don't care what the betting markets say. Maybe we're getting better odds to put our own money down on this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, I think here it's interesting because I think they feel like the biggest threat is the Chargers and not really Kansas City. A lot of people think Kansas City is probably the third team in the division. And so that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out this year. I think the pulse of Denver is one that, maybe Kansas City's time at the top is waning or has passed.
Why do you think that would be, Benjamin, that the Chargers might outrank the Chiefs in Denver's eyes?
I think part of it is, watching the Chargers the last couple of years, Sean Payton's always struggled against Jim Harbaugh, but, you look, it's been a quality team. When they haven't had a spate of injuries, they've been tough to beat. Now you've added guys that are well-known here in Denver. Adam Gase is on that offensive staff. He was, of course, on the Broncos offensive coordinator when they were record-setting. Mike McDaniel is running the offense. Of course, he's a very familiar name. He's from here. Right. And so I think there's a combination of adding those two names, the work they did on the offensive line this year, and just seeing how that team played in previous years when they were fully healthy.
Right. Adam Gase, back to that incredible, historic Peyton Manning season, right? He's the 55 touchdowns. He's the quarterback coach of that team, right? Maybe.
Yeah, he was the OC, QB coach, like those teams back then. He was kind of the architect of that. Now Peyton Manning was running the show against Peyton Manning, but Adam Gase was certainly the guy with the designation.
McDaniel is interesting. I love his story, and that's a guy I root for. I mean, Bills and Dolphins, the Bills continued to kind of own them, and obviously it came apart for the Dolphins, but I get the optimism about him with L.A. It sounds like you might, too.
Yeah, I think he's probably one of those guys that's best suited as a coordinator anyway. He's one of those people that's a brainiac. He loves drawing things up and that kind of stuff. His problem down there in Miami with a lot was managing personnel, and he doesn't have to do as much of that, I think, as the OC with the Chargers. Obviously a Shanahan disciple, and he's been through it in the league. He's seen it all. He's been around, suffered through some addiction and rehab issues and all that kind of stuff, and just managed to conquer all that. He's one of those guys that when you talk to him, you kind of can't help but root for him.
Right. Benjamin Albright, my guest. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. This is WGR. I hate to keep asking you questions about how you think everybody feels. I go on in different cities, and I get those questions, and I don't want to speak for everybody. You can't. But I am curious for how maybe in your own mind or how you think Denver sort of looks back on the end of last year, winning the Buffalo game in overtime in the playoffs. Then you get the Knicks news right after the game, which was shocking. And, the AFC Championship ends up being in a blizzard without your quarterback. I mean, do you throw your hands up a little bit because of that? Is it, being kind of new back into the playoffs and into the AFC Championship game, you never want to lose, but you sort of look at it maybe as growth. What are maybe the right sentiments for the Broncos at the end of last year?
Well, I think there's a feeling here that if Bo had been healthy, they probably beat the Patriots. I don't know if they beat the Seahawks, but they'd probably beat the Patriots. I think more.
Hey, Ben, we're kind of losing you here for a minute, so I don't know if you can go back to where you were if you moved like 30 seconds ago, but I lost you in the middle of that answer. Knicks, remember, I do, from what I remember about working that night after the Bills loss with Bulldog here, is the news that just sort of interrupted our post-mortem that Knicks had been injured. Sorry, Ben, hopefully this works better. You were saying...
Yeah, sorry about that. I think there's an optimism that comes out of that. I mean, I think the team is, certainly dejected that they didn't have full strength and Bo to play the Patriots, and obviously, they feel like they could have won that one. But you look at that and you say, okay, well, we got there. This is a return. We're bringing the whole band back, basically. I mean, John Franklin Myers is the only player they're not bringing back. And so I think there's a mentality that, hey, we got there with what we had. Why not us? Why can't we do it again? And so I think there's an optimism from that.
Benjamin, did anybody outside of the locker room know about the Knicks injury before Sean Payton announced it?
We all saw Bo like limping there. And so there was sort of this like, oh, he's a little dinged up, but we did not know the extent or severity of it. And no, it did not leak until right before Sean got up there to the podium. The Broncos front office, communications people kind of pulled some of us to the side there and said, hey, he's about to go up there and Bo's going to be done. You need to be in there for that. So.
Yeah, that had to be pretty shocking. I mean, I was just saying for a minute there how incredible that was here. I mean, we're sitting here trying to digest the loss and figure it all out. And then, we get in our ear, by the way, Bo Nix broke his ankle. And wasn't Nix bothered by how that went or what was disclosed eventually?
Yeah, that situation was, there's a lot to that. I'll say this. I mean, Bo probably dropped back too much in that game. Shouldn't have been running, QB power there toward the end. They should have let a running back run it. All kinds of decisions that were involved in that. Later on, afterwards, he sort of took exception to the way Sean Payton got out there and publicly talked about the injury and maybe described it as sort of recurring because he had had an issue with the other ankle back in college. And there was some friction, some definite friction from that. That's long since mended now, but at the time and the way that was presented, there was definite friction from Bo on that.
How do you feel, Ben, about how Nix is perceived as a quarterback in the league, a top quarterback, the success that he's had? I mean, he I think he gets sort of run over a little bit because of either his age or just sort of the way Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, even Burrow sort of established a hierarchy in the conference. And I think May has maybe even cracked that too. Does the question maybe should be, does Nick's, in your opinion, get enough respect?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the national narrative on him is somewhat lacking. I think some of the arguments that that are used against him are somewhat suspect. But the flip side of that, I mean, I think, you know, opposing players respect him. I think it's maybe a media and a fans thing. I mean, you look at this, he led the NFL in dropbacks last year, but didn't clear 4,000 yards. That was a little, you know, a little eye-opening. And so, you know, people look at all the screens and things like that, and they say, okay, well, you know, he doesn't throw the ball deep. Well, that's not true. I mean, he's got a pretty good deep ball, actually, which, you know, you guys saw a couple of those. It's just, you know, the way they were doing things last year when J.K. Dobbins went down and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, the offensive line gets credited as being one of the best offensive lines in football. Well, part of that's because Bo gets rid of the ball so quick and doesn't take sacks, you know, and the sacks are as much a quarterback stat as they are an offensive line stat. So I think it's, there's a little give and take with that. I think sometimes the narratives on him are incorrect, and then sometimes he does get the, you know, the praise he deserves.
Mm-hmm. Seven game-winning drives. I mean, you can't really scoff at that too much. So what have they done to get better? Jaylen Waddle, in my fantasy streets, Benjamin, there's a lot of excitement about Jaylen Waddle. He's a player that, over the course of the summer, has gone up in drafts. I guess the question, well, questions about him can be asked, I suppose. He hasn't always been the most durable guy. But I guess the question I would have is, can he be somebody, is he a clear number one? You know, you still have Sutton, and Denver is famous for just running in and out, a few other guys in and out in their running game and their passing game. What do you think it looks like for Waddle?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know about number one, but what he brings to the table changes what they do on offense. I mean, he can fly, but more importantly than that, he can gear down, change direction, and pick speed back up. And so that allows him to work the middle of the field. He's going to be the Z receiver. I mean, Sean Payton offense typically has got that X guy who's a, you know, big body slant guy, you know, Michael Thomas back in the day, Marcus Colston. That's what Cortland Sutton will play. And then Waddle will play the other side of that. He'll be the, you know, the Devery Henderson back there, Brandon Cooks, Ted Ginn, those types of guys that are on the backside. It can fly. And when you've got that guy, it changes how you play defense. I mean, it forces defenders to go back to, you know, too high looks a lot, opens up stuff underneath, and it's going to make things better for other guys like Evan Engram, who didn't have the most productive year last year.
That's interesting. So, I mean, Sutton, you see him still being Cortland Sutton going into this year? Like, I mean, he's not old or anything, 30. It's about the time to start asking those questions, but is he likely in your mind to be the player he's been?
I think so. I mean, he's looked like that in camp. Now, the question is this going to be his last year in Denver? The Broncos had previously drafted Pat Bryant, who has looked like an absolute star here in camp. And so I think what you're getting here is probably the last year of Sutton. Sutton knows that. I think he's playing for one more contract somewhere else. And I think you're going to get a player that looks pretty much like the Sutton of old. And, you know, he's going to have a lot of one-on-one attention because people are paying attention to Waddle, just another guy that gets some benefit from that.
How about the running back mix, Benjamin? That's another one with Denver that is really tough to predict, I think, sometimes, at least from the outside. Jonah Coleman seems interesting as a rookie. Dobbins back. RJ Harvey. How do you think it meshes?
Well, Dobbins is the guy until he's, you know, inevitably hurt. I know he made the promise to Denver media, said he pinky promises he's playing all 17 games. He'll buy everybody a beer if he doesn't. I told him I was going to hold him to that. I want my free beer. But, you know, as far as the rest of that goes, I mean, Dobbins is running back one. He's the main guy. After that, RJ Harvey has sort of a pass catching role. If you go back and look at Sean Payton's offense in New Orleans and how he deployed Reggie Bush, that's basically the RJ Harvey role. And then Jonah Coleman is probably the guy to own if you're a fantasy owner if Dobbins goes down, because he'll step into the Dobbins role rather than Harvey just moving up. Harvey will continue his same role, and Coleman, who has looked just phenomenal, will step into that J.K. Dobbins role. So if you were, you know, if you're looking at that thing, it's kind of a RB 1-2-3 with Dobbins, Coleman, Harvey, except that Harvey has sort of carved out a pass catching role as well.
Okay. Hey, no offense to the guy. I respect anybody that plays in this league, and what he's been through physically is, I mean, it's a tremendous effort and story and, you know, perseverance. If he's willing to extend that offer, my hand is up. I mean, there was the year with Ian Rappaport where Rappaport tweeted something about, I think it was Rappaport, somebody on that level, like tweeted something about Dobbins, you know, not being ready maybe for week one. He was still with Baltimore at the time, and he clapped back at that, but the report was correct, it turned out.
Yeah, and he's just super sensitive about that because it's, you know, it's one of those things. He has battled back from a myriad of devastating injuries, frankly, and credit to him for being able to battle back from that. But you know, monikers stick, and they stick for a reason. And so I think that's kind of where he's at right now, is he's trying to put that positivity back in the universe. But there's quite a bit of skepticism.
I want to get to Jim Leonard, but while we're on offense, Davis Webb, and the Bills might have dabbled in that idea too when they were looking for a replacement for Sean McDermott. He ends up what, getting promoted in Denver? Is he the play caller now, or what exactly?
Yeah, and there's some, you know, there's some mythology out there that Sean Payton has identified him and groomed him, and this was thing. Now, this was engineered by Bo and Greg Penner, the owner, and he's the play caller now. And you can see it, that some of the archaic aspects of Sean Payton's offense have been updated with Davis Webb on the show. There's more motion. There's more tempo. They break the huddle much quicker. And so those are things I think that are going to really matter once they get to playing this season. So, he's the play caller. He's the offensive coordinator. The question is how long he's going to be here before somebody snaps him up and makes him a head coach.
Pretty good career arc so far, being only 31 and in that spot, right? At least.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. He's a rising star. He's a young guy, but he's a rising star.
Jim Leonard takes over the Bills defense. What were your interactions with him like?
Oh, they were great. Jim was more than just. I mean, he was listed as the secondary coach, the DB's coach, that kind of thing. But he was much more involved than that. Kind of a lieutenant as the defensive coordinator. Great guy to be around. Loves football. Knows football. He was instrumental in helping to identify some draft picks too. When he was back there at Illinois, the Broncos drafted two or three players from Illinois from when he was there, including Miles Scott this past year, a converted receiver who's a safety now. That Leonard, basically taught him the ropes as a defender. So very instrumental. Great coach. That was one of those things that, honestly, a lot of people here expected Vance Joseph to maybe get a head coaching job this offseason and Jim Leonard to be the DC here. So, high marks for him all the way around here.
Big changes coming to the Bills defense underway after, 9 years with Sean McDermott, kind of doing it one way, and big adjustment transition time here for the Bills. A few minutes left with Benjamin Albright. Ben, what about the AFC overall here? We talked about the AFC West a little bit, and you have three contenders there. Man, it's tough for me to try to parse the rest of it. You've got at least two teams in each division at least where you can talk seriously about them winning big, I think. I'd include the Bengals, Jacksonville, and Houston in the South. It's going to be fun this year after a while of – last year was its own transition in the AFC where you had, four teams – had won the respective divisions 2 years in a row before last year, and then none of them did. So it could get pretty wild.
Yeah, it could. And that's that parody that we love in the NFL, right? The way the pendulum swings, and nobody has it unless you're the Tom Brady Patriots. Nobody has that lock on it forever. So it's good. I think it's good for the league. I think it's good for everybody. And you see some teams on the rise that have been more abundant over the years. I mean, Jacksonville being good all of a sudden was kind of fun. That kind of thing. You've got Houston. If they figure the quarterback situation out, that defense is lethal. You mentioned Cincinnati. They could pour the points on. The question is, can they field a defense? And that, they went out and got Dexter Lawrence, but we don't know. Baltimore with new coaching staff, what's that going to look like without Harbaugh there? There's a lot of questions, but I think it's a lot of fun questions. I don't think it's a lot of, it's a lot of a trudgery. I think this is one of those things where you've got good teams that have question marks, and I think it's a pretty fun playing field.
That Denver schedule, you got the NFC West this year. I love it when it's West versus West. They're such great matchups and a lot of night games right away at Kansas City Monday night in week one. The Bills have their version of this. The Bills get the NFC North. The Bills have five games, well, of course they would, against the NFC, and they're all at night. And they all look like, really good matchups on paper. And Denver's schedule is much the same, including the Bills in Denver on Christmas Day.
Yeah, that's going to be, first of all, that's going to be a fun one to work. But, it is. You mentioned the West versus West thing. And, the NFC West is kind of like the AFC West, where you got three teams that are contenders and one team that's the goofy stepchild. And, the Arizona Cardinals and the Raiders for the divisions respectively. But, yeah, it's going to be tough. And the first, 6-8 weeks that Denver plays, it's a brutal schedule before it gets kind of easy. And then, starts to tighten back up there around Christmas. So if the Broncos can weather that storm early, that middle of that schedule, very favorable for them. And then, it sets up beautifully heading on into the late season of playoffs.
very similar to the Bills schedule. And then last thing for you, Benjamin, you get, as it happens, Denver gets Buffalo and New England back-to-back late in the season, just like last year in the playoffs, the Bills out there and then the Patriots in the AFC Championship. How do you compare those two teams?
Well, I mean, the Bills are, you know, going through that transition. You're going to be changing defensive styles. You know, you went from, you know, zone defense under McDermott to an attacking defense under Jim Leonard. It's going to be a lot more one high. You know, everybody, you got the threat of Josh Allen. That's going to be interesting. And, we hear reports about how him and DJ Moore look together and all that. As far as the Patriots go, I mean, they're a good football team, but it's, you know, it feels like they're a team that's more on the rise than established like Buffalo. You know, you got the young guy, Drake May. You got Vrabel. We have yet to see with all the stuff that went on with him this summer, how that looks, how that team stays together this season. So, you know, good defense, but another team that maybe, you know, you're kind of waiting to see these pieces they brought in, how they fit.
Benjamin, thank you. Good luck with that parking garage. Hopefully your car wasn't in it.
Yeah, it wasn't. Thank goodness.
That's a break. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the season.
All right, take care.
Benjamin Albright out in Denver, KOA, Colorado. Bills and Broncos, Christmas Day. One of three games on Christmas. Because we have to have games on Christmas. We already had NBA games. That wasn't enough. We have to have NFL games on Christmas. Let's get one of these joint practices played in Europe. I mean, is that inevitable? That's Roger Goodell's word, right? Inevitable that there'll be a full-time team in Europe? I don't know. It's not that hard to comprehend. Everything's about money, and somebody's going to step up. And something I could have asked Ben about, because he's tweeted about it, what that is going to look like. My guess would be, and you know, maybe I haven't done enough research to make a more educated guess, my guess would be Mexico. Mexico City. We've had plenty of games there. Arizona, the Texas teams, the California teams, all relatively accessible. I mean, it's a long trip. Maybe even I should compare that with London, because I'm not sure it's really that much different. But I could see either of those being the first or the breakthrough where there's a franchise there full time. And I would guess that we're not moving anybody. So do they add one team only? Is it two? Is it London and Mexico City? And those are just new NFL franchises? I would think, maybe just a guess, that the NFL would expand internationally before it expands domestically. That there would be teams in Europe or South America or Mexico before there's another team in, I don't know, where would it be? Would Toronto be in that conversation too? I mean, so big, so close. Imagine a Bills versus Toronto rivalry in a decade or two in the NFL. But it's going to happen. Does it have to be the worst thing ever? No, it's just sort of how these things go. Growth, money, that's going to be what dictates. The Broncos, are they a rival now? 2 years in a row in the playoffs? I mean, how many would it take for you to care a lot about the Denver Broncos as a team to beat or a team in the Bills' hair, so to speak? 803-0550 for your calls. Would love to talk about James Cook, DJ Moore, Dalton Kincaid, the kind of the usual suspects when we have these topics on our show. We've got Joe Brady in his first year and the changes on defense. Everything is ramping up to week one in Houston coming up September 13th. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. Lines are open for your calls. Sal coming up at 5 with a report from Cleveland. This is WGR.
And Joe DiBiase.
We just talk about practice. We sitting here, I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice.
Jeremy White.
I mean, how silly is that? I mean, we're talking about practice.
And Joe DiBiase.
I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we're talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice? We're talking about practice, man.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on Western New York Sports Giant, WGR.
Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. It's a pretty hazy looking day out there right now. I think we might get some rain a little bit later on, but the Bills are in Cleveland, and we'll see what we get for joint practice a little bit later on. We're going to have Peter Bukowski on the Western Hotline in a few moments here from Locked On Packers as we've been going through the Bills' schedule here little by little, and we are nearing the end. Chicago, week 15. They have a stretch there after a couple of 1 o'clock games where they go Thanksgiving night, Sunday at 4:25, Sunday night football, Saturday night football, Friday Christmas. Like the week 12 to week 16 schedule for the Bills is all over the place. They play on a Thursday, a Friday, a Saturday, and a Sunday in that stretch. They play night games. They play 4 o'clock games. They don't play any 1 o'clock games. But they do have a couple 1 o'clock games, obviously, earlier in the season. We'll talk to Peter in a moment. The other thing that we have not yet discussed today is the likelihood of a blue and gold goat head that we're going to get for what was announced yesterday by the NHL and Fanatics, Hometown Remix. And that means, you know, they're going to come up with a long list of why this is meaningful to the community of every jersey they do. I also hope they do it like one at a time.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
That would be.
You got enough days before like preseason and regular season. Like drop one new alternate jersey a day in the NHL. Right?
That'd be awesome. I think gray might be a good fit for the Sabres, right?
Oh, okay.
Oh. Yeah, it might work.
With a blue collar on it?
Yeah.
We're going to get a blue and gold goat head?
I think so.
We're like 99% sure we're going to get a blue jersey with a white goat head?
I'm so anti that, it's not even funny.
So I really wasn't that strongly against it. I just thought it's fine, kind of boring, expected. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen things sold by the Sabres, whether it's merchandise or whether it is the alternate uniform they had a few years back that was all white, right, where we've had blue and gold goat heads. This would be the most, you know, the most colorful of them.
For sure.
But it's bad because, why is it really that bad?
They already have it. They're not treading any new ground. That's my thing. I see the goat head multiple times this season already. I don't need a blue version of it on the ice as well. We have the original Royal Blues. I think those two coexist perfectly as, you know, their own entities. I don't think you need to start crossbreeding them, essentially, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was cool for the reverse retro because it was all white. It was different. If you just throw the goat head on a home jersey at this point.
You are kind of still doing what the, you can call it an initiative, like whatever it is. They are still doing the thing that they're setting out to do, which I think is take an old uniform or concept and just spin it into different colors and whatnot.
Yeah.
I mean, I threw a couple mock-ups on Twitter. I like the idea of doing something with the 40th anniversary uniform.
Agreed. I think that's one of the best looks they've ever had, and they haven't done anything else with it.
No, so. And they've never really even flirted with doing anything else with it that I've seen. Anyways, we'll get back into that if you got an idea on a uniform. Uniform radio. We do need another one after the Bills came out with theirs, and you know, we'll see. I don't think this one will be met as negatively as that one was. Let's go to the Western Hotline. Next on the Bills schedule, the Packers in week 14. That's a Sunday night game, and that'll be in Lambeau Field. The Bills make a trip to Lambeau once every 8 years. Peter from Locked On Packers, Locked On NFL as well. Locked On Today, excuse me. Thanks, Peter, for jumping on today.
Thanks for having me, and hopefully the Bills will not be dressed like the Montreal Alouettes when they come to Lambeau on Sunday night.
That's a good comparison. They definitely will not be. They'll be wearing white of some sort, I would assume. I like having that matchup. I mean, that is a trip that is not made all that often, and I think there's a small list, Peter, of stadiums Josh Allen has not won in. I mean, that one you could say he hasn't scored a point in because I think that's the only game of his career they got shut out in, which of course is, you know, years ago now.
Yeah, but it feels right. Like, he is one of the signature players right now in the NFL. Lambeau Field is one of, if not the signature stadium in the NFL. And it is kind of unfortunate that they don't get to make that trip very often. It's what made, you know, I was there in 2014 when Tom Brady came to Lambeau Field in a year where Aaron Rodgers was the MVP. Those were two of the best teams in the NFL. And it's just like those games, they have a little bit extra juice to them. And this one being on, you know, on primetime island game, like, I think it's going to be a blast. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, me too. That, by the way, was Allen's third start of his career. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot's happened. A lot's happened since then. So what's kind of been the story of the Packers offseason so far? I mean, really, I guess maybe the starting point is, I feel like I am always seeing debates about how good Jordan Love is. Which I am one that thinks he is one of the better quarterbacks in football. And whether you're looking at like EPA stats for that or the film guys that are doing reviews on that, I don't know. How highly do you think of Love when compared to his peers in the league?
I think he is, you know, there's that core group of guys at the top, you know, for my money, and let me ingratiate myself to your audience, not just because I'm here, but I think Josh Allen for the last probably 2 or 3 years has been the best quarterback in the league. But there's clearly that top group of guys. I think he's in the next group. And I think that this could be the year that with Tucker Kraft coming back, they've streamlined the pass catcher group. That's been one of the big stories of this offseason is Romeo Doubs is now in New England. Dontayvion Wicks is now in Philadelphia. And so their receivers are going to be Christian Watson, Jaden Reed, and Matthew Golden in a, you know, sort of like nation role here for the Packers. And I think this could be the year they take the governor off a little bit of Jordan Love, and he has the counting stats to go along with all the efficiency stats that say he's been one of the most efficient, effective quarterbacks in the NFL. The stat I use a lot is since 2023, if you like EPA per play, and I do, the top two quarterbacks in the NFL since Jordan Love has been the starter in EPA per play, Josh Allen, Jordan Love. That's it. So that just tells you for what, you know, you want to say Matt LaFleur plays a role in there. Cool. That's fine. I think that's true. But in terms of just like efficient quarterback play, Jordan Love has been one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL. One of the reasons he doesn't have the counting stats, guys, is the Packers just play a slow pace. And it's been one of my criticisms of Matt LaFleur the last few years. Like, they need to increase their play usage by like 30%. They need to play faster at times. They don't need to bleed the play clock down to zero. But one thing Matt LaFleur said this offseason is Jordan Love at the line of scrimmage is the best quarterback that he's been around. He was there for Aaron Rodgers for two MVP seasons. He was Matt Ryan's quarterback coach in 2016 when he was an MVP and the Falcons had one of the best offenses we've ever seen. And he says Jordan Love at the line of scrimmage, making protection calls, getting into checks and alignment changes, he's the best that Matt LaFleur has been around. So that's one of the reasons why they do that. So they get in, okay, under center, kill, all the like cans and all those things that have become part of modern quarterback play. Jordan Love is really good at that, which is one of the reasons why they do play slow at times, because they just trust him to get in the perfect play.
It's funny. That sounds very similar to what the Bills have kind of transitioned to in the last couple of years, which has been a slower game, more running. I mean, I think some of that has been to protect their defense, but I've had the same mentality, which is EPA per play. If you got the best guy in the league at EPA per play, you should be running more plays.
Yes, exactly right. You want to, and when you are the better team, which, you know, in most of these games, the Bills and the Packers have the better team, or at least in the case of the Bills, you have the differentiator, the guy who maybe is the differentiator in the NFL right now. You want him to have as many plays as possible. You do not want variance. And the lower tempo and the lower possession games that you play, the more variance comes into play. I'll give you a perfect example. The Packers played the Panthers in October last year. They had three possessions in the first half. And I think they had seven total for the game. Well, you introduce a little bit of variance. They fumbled in the red zone. They missed a field goal. And that's how you lose a game like that. And, you know, you score 2.5 points per possession. You go, that's a pretty nice number. But if you only have seven possessions, you can't even get to 20 points. Right. And so you need to play a little bit more of a higher variance game. And I think for both of these teams, you may see a little bit more higher variance defense. Jim Leonard, a little bit more aggressive. Maybe want to blitz a little bit more. I think you're going to see that from Jonathan Gannon too, more aggressive than Jeff Hafley was. And then maybe they'll give up some big plays, but then you get the ball back to your guy.
and you let the offense go cook.
And the Bills might think personnel-wise they're better set up to do that, acquiring DJ Moore. I think it's a big reason why they did that this offseason. For the Packers, how, personnel-wise around Love, I know there's more clarity, it feels like, at receiver this year. And I've loved Jaden Reed since he entered the league, and he obviously had an injury plague year last season. So with their top three being a little bit more clear now, how good do you feel like it is, the setup around Love, even extending to what LaFleur is as a play caller, the offensive line, and also, again, those receivers?
I think this is the group for Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur with the way that they want to play. They want to chase explosive plays. They want to go big game hunting every down. And when they do pass, and I like to see them pass a little bit more, but when they do pass, they're chucking that thing. And that's how Jordan Love wants to play, and that's how Matt LaFleur wants to play. And so, like, last year, they had the most explosive offense on any down last year was the Packers on third down. And I love when teams are aggressive on third down, third and short, third and medium, third and long. Don't try and get 7 yards when you need 7 yards. Try and get 17. Try and get 27. And you're not always going to hit, but when you do, those explosive plays are just so valuable to contributing to scoring points. And so Christian Watson, big, long, like extremely explosive. I'm not sure there's a faster guy that's 6'4" or bigger in the NFL than Christian Watson is. And he has become, you know, he came off an ACL last year and came back and just looked like the same guy. In fact, looked like the best version we've ever seen of Christian Watson. Tucker Kraft for the first half of last year looked like the best tight end in the NFL. And so I think the pieces fit together really, really nicely. Jaden Reed, one of the more explosive vertical slot players, but can also do some of the gadget, scheme it up kind of stuff. And so this group is kind of the platonic ideal of the way you'd want to structure a Packers, Matt LaFleur, Jordan Love offense. And then, you know, Josh Jacobs is your bell cow back. They're hoping for Marshawn Lloyd to be healthy this year, finally. He gives you the chance to rip off some explosive runs, which they just don't have with Josh Jacobs. So this could be, even though it's not the deepest group that they've had, it could be the most explosive group that they've had, which is exactly how they want to play.
On Watson, so they paid him, and I know, like, the counting numbers have not been there for him in his career. Part of that is he's missed some time, but, like, last year, 611 yards is the career high. They pay him, they keep him. I know this from fantasy. Like, there's expected to be a big glow-up for him this year, and what Jordan Love said about him recently and, like, how they're going to use him, like, Z receiver, that was interesting to me because doesn't that kind of make it sound like they might view him more now as an all-around threat? More than, I feel like, the first few years of his career, you can correct me if I'm wrong, he's been used more as, like, the just the vertical guy that's going to take the top off the defense. Some of those are going to be even cardio routes.
Yeah, plenty of cardio for Christian Watson early in his career. He has also developed as a player, and he came from, a D1 dub program, but the best one, right, at North Dakota State. And so it took some time for him to develop the route running. You know, he was not someone that would snap off routes early in his career. And now he can do that. Now he can get open one-on-one. And that has elevated his game. Last year, you look at, I think yards per route run is the stat in football. I think it is the most indicative single stat of any position because you earn targets, you earn yards, and at volume, Christian Watson last year was a top 10 receiver. According to Pro Football Focus's yards per route run metric, he was also qualitatively one of their top 10 receivers last year. In grade, and I know people's grades, you know, your mileage may vary on Pro Football Focus. I get that. That's fine. But the numbers say he was one of the most productive receivers in the NFL. If you extend out a 17-game schedule for him, he would have been a 1,000-yard receiver last year. So I think you're going to see that. The joke that I like to make, I like to call him Tall Y. Hilton, because if you think about what T.Y. Hilton was in his prime, he was that big play vertical receiver. But on 3rd and 8, he could still win and get open and get you, you know, a first down when you needed him to. And he could be a higher target guy. And Andrew Luck was the perfect quarterback because Andrew Luck wanted to chuck that thing too. So I think you're going to see someone who can do a little bit of everything. I think of, there was a 3rd down play against the Chicago Bears. Jordan Love threw 3 touchdowns in that first game against them. all three on third down, and one of them was a slant from the slot where Love, he identifies man coverage, gives Christian a little bit of a hand signal, hey, you know, we're going to change the route here, and he wins quick on a slant, nobody in the middle of the field, and it's a foot race, and Christian Watson is going to win a foot race more often than not. I'm not sure I've ever seen him caught in the open field. He just can absolutely fly. And so those are the things that he's doing now that he wasn't doing early in his career. If he stays healthy, I think the hype around him is absolutely warranted. I think the only impediment to him having a monster season is the fact that they love Matthew Golden. He's been, I think, the most impressive receiver in training camp. And as soon as Tucker Kraft came back to doing 11-on-11 work, he was the focal point of the offense immediately. And it's built into this offense. I mean, we've seen a tight end carry the workload in a Shanahan McVay type offense. Tucker Kraft said he's sending George Kittle clips to Matt LaFleur and say, hey, can we run this? Can we do this? Can we try this? And LaFleur's like, yeah, man, like, let's do it. And so I think Tucker Kraft is also going to be a pretty high volume player in this offense, not just fantasy, but on the field as an impactful guy. He was on his way to being an all pro last year. If he stays healthy, he's got a chance to do it again this year.
Yeah, there are so many good players in that offense. Kraft was on his way to breaking out last year before the injury. Last thing on the offense, is there still a potential for a Josh Jacobs suspension?
It sounds like there is still a potential for a suspension, even though, you know, he was arrested over Memorial Day. And then the decision was made not to charge him. Now, the NFL does not have to care about whether or not he was charged. They can look at, you know, the police reports and witness statements and those sorts of things that they have access to that we don't. I have been asking, I have been trying to get whatever information that they have. I've been trying to figure out, like, there was a weird thing where a call was made and it wasn't until 2 days later that Josh Jacobs was ultimately arrested, and why that is, especially when they were looking for his car immediately. They never ended up, you know, going and getting him, even though he was a pretty, you know, it's not hard to find Josh Jacobs in Green Bay, Wisconsin. So that part is weird, but again, no charges there. They could still happen. If they're going to do something though, it's gotta be soon, right? Like, the games start in less than a month. So we're going to have to get word from the NFL here soon. James Pierce Jr. just got his suspension in Atlanta. That's a very different thing because he was not only charged, he was set to go to trial. They ended up agreeing on a pretrial agreement where he's on probation. So it's not like he's going to face jail time, but he's still, half the season is going to be lost for him. I don't expect that to be the case for Josh Jacobs. I think if he gets suspended, it'll be 4 games max. So, you know, as long as he's healthy, he'd be there for Buffalo week 14, but there still is a chance. My understanding of the facts as we have them right now, though, is I would not expect him to be suspended unless something changes. I don't know, you know, what that could be. But I would think if we're sitting here now in late August and nothing has happened, I would be surprised at this point if something else did happen.
Right. It is so tough, though, right, to gauge, like, what the league is going to do on this.
Yeah.
We had a similar situation a couple of years ago. Von Miller had a similar incident where I believe he was charged, but then the charges were dropped, like, very quickly after the fact. And that was during the offseason. Actually, that was before during the 2023 season, if I remember correctly, Peter. And then he was suspended in October of 2024. Like,
yeah.
The season had already begun, and then he was suspended 4 games. I don't think that's normal. There might only be a couple examples of that, but man, like, the league can just do whatever they want. It almost feels like whenever they want on this.
Yeah, there's never been consistency with that stuff, unfortunately, and that's why they created a policy, right? They created a domestic violence policy,
right,
that gives them broad latitude in these sorts of cases. So, you know, the weird thing about this, again, is we have almost no information about what happened, what the accusations are. We know sort of, like, what was said, and we have, like, the 911 calls, but we don't know any of the other circumstances. We don't know what potential injuries were or anything like that. So it is really hard from the outside to gauge these things. I spoke to Josh Jacobs' lawyer a couple different times during the process, and he was like, you know, I don't think anything is going to happen here, but we'll see. So it's certainly something that there's, I don't think anyone should act like there is clarity here with what's going to happen.
All right. Lastly, before we let you go, how good is the defense expected to be this year? And how much of that is just when Micah Parsons comes back and what form he's in when he comes back?
Yeah, I think, you know, when Micah Parsons is on the field, this is going to be a really good defense. And, you know, last year against the Eagles, Jalen Hurts, after the Packers played the Eagles, he said that's the best defense we've seen this season. They had played, you know, Brian Flores. They had played the Broncos, who had, you know, statistically one of the best defenses in the NFL. And then without Micah, it kind of fell off a cliff. Now, Jonathan Gannon is coming in now, replacing Jeff Hafley. The Packers have, for my money, the best safety duo in the NFL. And if you add Javon Bullard with Xavier McKinney and Evan Williams, I think the best three defensive back set that you could have at that middle sort of spine of the defense type part of the field. And then you add in Zaire Franklin in the offseason. He has been an immediate culture changer for the Packers, someone who just brings a nastiness and an edge, along with Edgerrin Cooper, who's one of the young ascending players at the position at linebacker. I think they have one of the best middle of the field defenses in terms of personnel. The question is going to be, can Lucas Van Ness stay healthy? He looked really good in camp last year, has looked really good in camp again. The guy just has to stay on the field, and he can be a really good player. They're thrilled with what Baron Sorrell looks like in year two. He's going to be the starter opposite Lucas Van Ness until Micah Parsons gets back. He's been Micah Parsons' shadow this offseason. Everything Micah would have done, he has got, you know, Baron Sorrell working with his trainer, you know, doing workouts in the offseason. Like, he has been, like I said, Micah Parsons' shadow while Parsons rehabs from the ACL injury. So they're really excited about that. The corner is the big question. That's the spot that Packer fans are most worried about. Keyshawn Nixon coming back. They added Brandon Cisse in the second round. He looks like an immediate keeper. He just looks like a starter. He just looks like one of those guys. And immediately is that. And then they brought in Benjamin St. Juice from the Chargers last year, who was surprisingly very good for the Chargers in playing a somewhat similar style of defense. So he's someone to keep an eye on as well. Could be this team by October, frankly. He and Cisse, I think, are going to be those guys. So that's the big question mark with his team. If the pass rush is good, though, if Micah Parsons is on the field, even with Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Valentine last year, they were a very good defense. So their defense can be really good. It's how good can they be without Parsons. The good news for the Packers is the schedule is not tough before Parsons gets back. They've got the Jets. They've got Tampa. They've got Minnesota to start the season. So they've got the Bears week five. The expectation is that Micah's pushing to get back for week six against the Cowboys. So how well can the defense play the first 5 weeks of the season? Can they get through that 3-2, 4-1? And then they're set up really well when the schedule gets much tougher.
Peter Bukowski from Locked On Packers, also theleap.football. Thanks, Peter. Always appreciate the time, and maybe we'll catch up again in December.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Peter Bukowski, Wester Hotline, as the Bills play the Packers later in the year, and that'll be a Sunday night game. Micah Parsons should be back by then, and Jacobs would likely be back by then if suspended also. Not saying, by the way, when I say like the NFL can do whatever they want, whenever they want, that is a negative thing, because if these guys are doing this, and even though they're not charged, like, they still should be suspended. And if Jacobs is guilty or there's evidence that he did, I don't have the exact details in front of me, the domestic violence incident that happened in the offseason, then he should absolutely be suspended. 803-0550 is the phone number. The Raiders are asking for more public money to improve their stadium. $158 million improvement. The Raiders. Their stadium's 5 years old. What? What? Five-year-old stadium? They want, I mean, it's not a billion, but $158 million. So they want to make the stadium's north entry the new front door of the stadium.
Thought they were going to put a mini sphere in there.
It's an expensive front door.
Yeah. What?
They want a pedestrian deck, public plaza, event deck, and other transportation improvements.
Mm.
So this would be ahead of being the home of Super Bowl 63.
Right.
So they want it because they want it for the Super Bowl.
Okay.
But, man, it's an expensive improvement for a stadium that is 6 years old.
How would we feel if in 2031 or something, the Bills were like, hey, we need $200 million more dollars, please.
Yeah, that's a tough scene.
That would be tough, I think.
What did the Bills need to do, though?
They're not hosting a Super Bowl.
What did the Raiders think they had to do 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Like if the Bills decide in 5 years we want to change the stairwells.
Right.
So we need $100 million to do that or
We're
something.
We're going to add a hot tub club in or something. Like, you know.
Yeah, listen to hot tub club.
I think
like
I
on
think,
a deck overlooking the overlooking the field,
like the Jaguars thing, but a hot tub to keep you warm in the winter.
You wouldn't want to do a pool.
No.
Hot
would,
tub.
Hot tub. It would have to be hot tub.
Wow, listen to this. This is a night. We should have been on this 2 years ago, 3 years ago. When did
should
they called do the blueprints? Hot tub club. I think that's a good idea. I mean, I've seen the videos of the 90s where, I mean, they probably still do this in the tailgate lots of the fans before the AFC Championship game in 91, maybe it was before 51-3. And in the Bills yearbook video, there's fans in the hot tub before the game tailgating in like January with the snow all over. I like that idea. When we come back, how much credit should the Bills get for trying to go after big names? They tried on Vita Vea. They've tried on a lot of guys. The Sabres too. Hey, we tried to get this player. Does that do anything for you? Let me know what you think. 803-0550 coming back here on WGR.
Well, we both talked about that if we see out of our ones, our older players, what we want to see on Thursday, they would not play in the game. We agreed upon that. Plan is that we'll play our ones a significant amount against each other on Thursday in a controlled environment. Not that the other guys aren't going to get reps, but in a controlled environment and see where we're at.
Todd Monken, Browns head coach. We'll talk more about the Browns coming up with Jonathan Peterlin in a couple of minutes. If you notice a rattle in your ducts or maybe a rise in your heating and cooling bills, if you do, give Belknap a ring. With 0% financing, the cost of upgrading to a high-efficiency dual-fuel heating system is a breeze. Learn more at belknapheating.com. That is belknapheating.com. Jonathan Peterlin now on the Wester Hotline. Bills and Browns going through joint practice today, preseason game coming up on Saturday. Jonathan from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Thanks for joining. Appreciate your time as always.
Hey, Joe. How's it going today, man?
Pretty good. How about these Browns going into this year? What is this right back to a lot of Brown seasons, like pre-Mayfield Stefanski, where it's the bar is pretty low for the season?
It's low, but it's at least encouraging, though. At least, I don't know, I feel that way. It's kind of a little bit of a disagreement here locally because there's so much young talent. And so, obviously, we don't have a quarterback. That's obvious to anybody that's paying attention. But we do have a lot of young players that are at least exciting. And so, it feels like if 5.5 is what Vegas is saying, and I'm getting killed for being optimistic and being like, this could be a 7-win team. That, like, you know, still put that in proper perspective. A 7-win team is still not great, obviously. But that's kind of like the people drinking the Kool-Aid are in that world. Like, 7 wins could happen, and that's about it.
Right, which is maybe you get to December and you're in the hunt graphic is like a good yeah. season. Maybe for the Browns. I mean, how hard will that be for them if they don't have a quarterback? Also, how strong even should that if be? Are you pretty confident that they're not going to have it this year at quarterback, or is there some Sanders optimism for you?
If it's Deshaun, they got no chance. Zero chance, in my opinion. Now, I've been trying to find ways that I'm just absolutely wrong about Deshaun Watson. I'm betting on the idea that I've watched him now for, it's been 4 years of him in a Browns uniform. He's been on the field for 3, can't do anything with it. He's injured way too often, and in practices, he can't make throws. So, like, I'm betting on that happening. Now, there is the outside chance that Monken does what he did in the preseason game against the Bears, where he just, no ball is thrown beyond 10 yards. It's dink and dunk. It's a lot of checkdowns. And the wide receivers that we now have in Concepcion and Boston are like that good. And Judkins is that good in the run game. And this offensive line, this makeshift offensive line just comes together. And there's just enough around him that'll make Deshaun Watson look better than maybe he really is. Like, that's the only way that I'm wrong about this. But with Deshaun, there's no hope. With Shador, there's at least a little hope. Shador has big game ability to himself and big play ability to himself. It's just, he's just maddeningly inconsistent is the problem with Shador. He'll have really, really strong, high-level NFL throws, and it'll be met by two plays later, something you just, you wouldn't see backup quarterbacks do. So, like, that's what Shador's got to get over. But so if, like, Shador plays 13 games, let's say, if Deshaun starts, and then after four games, they you know, pull the plug, and then Shador plays, yeah, you got a better chance. But it's still... it's still not the greatest.
What happened to Watson's ability? Like, the off the field stuff was so bad, and I feel like there's a, you know, there's a large contingent of fans that, like, okay, this is karma. But, like, why has it happened that he feels like he got to Cleveland and he lost the ability to basically throw the football?
That's like the $230 million question. I wish if I could explain that, the Browns would hire me on the spot and be like, they give me a job. It's fascinating, Joe. It really is, because there's no reason why his ability should just be gone because he didn't play for 700 days. But I think the injuries are a big factor of this, and I think mentally it was a big factor in this. And so I think there's just a couple things that are constantly working against him. But I've had it explained as, and when you go to these practices. So, like, 15 days ago, he legitimately did look unplayable. We do our show every day from there this time of the year. And so, like 2.5 weeks ago, legitimately looked unplayable. But you could still see there's, like, his arm isn't dead. He's still making passes. He's still making throws. It's just when you watch, there's, like, 15% of these throws that you'd never see him make previously in Houston. It just wasn't a thing. And when you talk to people around the Browns, that's what they'll tell you, is like the idea that he has some ability there. It's just these like 15-20% of throws that are just inexplainable, that he never made in Houston, that are just ducks, that are just wildly inaccurate, that just account for nothing. And so that's part of the problem. And he just has not been able to erase those. Nobody knows why.
So what do you think is most likely, that he starts the year and then Sanders comes in at some point in the middle?
I would bet a lot of money on that being the result, yeah. At this point, the Browns seem like they're pretty steadfast on that being the decision. They won't publicly say it yet, but it's all but over. Deshaun Watson will be the week one starter. And then Shador, the way that this works, you see, Joe, it's nice. In Buffalo, you guys get Josh Allen to play every single game. Uh-huh. Very nice. I'm sure you guys remember before Josh Allen, though, and it's like, wait, hold on. How did two quarterbacks, three quarterbacks, four quarterbacks?
Uh-huh.
How many can we get in here? And that's kind of the world the Browns are in right now. And so we're going to have Deshaun start. Hopefully then Shador comes in rather quickly. But we'll see how long of a leash that is. But, yeah, it's going to be Deshaun, and then it'll be Shador, and that'll be it. But I would bet a lot of money Shador plays more games than Deshaun this year.
Yeah. Before we get back into the current team, Jonathan Peterlin with us, 92.3 The Fan, I spent some time earlier in our show this morning looking back on the Browns over the last, like, 5 years. I mean, really the last, like, 25 years. And I like Mayfield a lot, and I always have. And I wonder how much revisionist history you guys are doing, fans are doing, with Mayfield and maybe even Stefanski. Because, I don't know, there's so many bad years in there. I said earlier, like, I feel like if they just sat still with those two, I don't know if they would have been challenging for Super Bowls, but they'd be challenging for playoffs and divisions a lot. And they just had to go make the Watson move, and it all blew up from there. Is that happening a lot? Like, what if we had done it differently and just kept going with Baker?
Yeah, your read on it is right, Joe. We do that a lot. It's a lot of, like, what could have happened. Here's something I think fans, maybe just people around, maybe not the Browns necessarily, but maybe nationally, rewrite about that whole time period. And I was a Baker guy, so I need to put that up front. I liked Baker a lot. Stefanski, I kicked to the rocks. I no problem getting rid of Stefanski.
Okay.
But I liked Baker a lot. Here's the problem, though, and here's what I've always respected about the decision, even though I did not agree with the Deshaun Watson trade, and obviously it's been one of the worst trades in NFL history. I'm not just telling you that after the fact. I did not agree with it at the time. I was, like, one of the few people at the time at the station that actually really liked Baker Mayfield and to stay with this. But Baker was, like, a, you know, the 15th best quarterback in the NFL, which today, now we know you can win with that. Jalen Hurts wins 2 years ago. Last year was Sam Darnold. Like, you can win with the 15th best quarterback. But at the time, the prevailing thought, especially in this AFC, you know this, Joe. I mean, it's Josh Allen. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's Lamar Jackson. It's Joe Burrow. At the time, it looked like if you had the 15th best quarterback, you weren't getting out of it. And so Andrew Berry recognized that, and he talked about it. Like, we need to be elite at that position. We can't just be middle of the road. And so that's why they made the move. They saw a ceiling with Baker Mayfield, and they saw a ceiling with Deshaun Watson. They thought Deshaun was going to be better. That's why they did it. And so I never will blame Andrew Berry for doing that. There's something about the stones it takes to pull the trigger on that. That, like, I love the DNA of that. I love that mentality. It's just not how football has turned out to be for the next, I don't know, half decade. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, we'd be in a much, much better spot if we just kept Baker.
All right. So to the current Browns, what is your initial impression here through a few months of Todd Monken? We play a clip of him once in a while. Feel like he gives you a good quote here and there. What about him as a coach? Like, how do you think about him going into year one?
Old school football guy. I have no idea if he's going to suck or not week one. I would be very surprised if he just flat out sucked because it's a him problem at this point. When they made the hire, I wasn't convinced it was the greatest thing in the world. I still don't know if it's the greatest thing in the world, but he's an old school football guy. He is running this the right way. Like, everything is organized, which is a big worry we'd had because the only time we'd seen Todd Monken previously was in 2019 under Freddie Kitchens, and that was an absolute disaster, and that was very disorganized. And so we got very worried, but this is a pro. Like, there's no other way to put it. Again, I cannot say old school more times than I've said it already. That's his DNA. And I love the idea. He recognizes himself. This is his one chance to be a head coach. Is it the greatest situation? Maybe not, but he's got one chance, so he's going to do it his way. And so there's something to respect about that. I think he is the right guy for the Browns right now. Doesn't mean he's the right guy 5 years from now, but he's the right guy right now.
So with him at the helm offensively, he's been the offensive coordinator in Baltimore, obviously, for a couple of years. You mentioned in Cleveland before that. Outside of quarterback, I mean, there are things to like, right? Like, aren't the rookie receivers both getting rave reviews at camp, Denzel Boston and KC Concepcion?
Oh, they're fantastic. It kind of rotates day in, day out, which one is making more jaw-dropping plays and which one is better to watch. Like, instantly. It's funny, Joe. Last year, instantly Harold Fannin, within like three plays, also Carson Schwessinger, who won Rookie Defensive Player of the Year, within like three plays of being in the field, you're like, oh, that's an NFL player. That's very obvious. How did everyone in the NFL draft just sleep on this guy? Same thing we're kind of talking about with Concepcion in Boston, especially Boston going into the second round. When you watch him play out there, you're like, how did this guy make it to the second round? Yeah, he's absolutely incredible. And so, yeah, there's a lot of hype around the rookies. It seems like for the second straight year, Andrew Berry did a nice job in this draft class.
Yeah, at the risk of alerting my, 12 fantasy leagues to this, but I love Harold Fannin. I mean, he's one of those guys, right? Like, third-round pick, and then he just got 100 targets, like, right away and was really strong year one.
We have no backup tight end at this point. We have five backup tight ends, which means we have no backup tight ends. Like, Harold Fannin's going to get a bunch of footballs thrown in his direction, and especially if Shador's in there, by the way. Once Shador gets in there, if you don't see as much of an uptick with Deshaun, once Shador gets in there, Shador loves Harold Fannin.
Yeah, Fannin, one of those guys who put up insane college numbers at the end, but he played at, I think, Bowling Green, right? Like, small school.
Bowling Green.
That's probably why, he fell, for big reason for it.
He had a 1,500-yard season at Bowling Green State.
Right, as a tight end. At running back in the run game, I guess this would maybe more of an offensive line question, because Judkins is good and talented, but I remember maybe like end of Mayfield and into when it's Flacco and, the last couple of years, there were times where the Browns had like the best offensive line in football. Is that the opposite now? Like, where are they on that front, plus where the run game kind of mixes into that?
Hard to know, only because we have five new offensive linemen this year.
So all of them.
It's one of those all of them. Yeah. It's the first time in NFL history, or at least in 1970s, the stat on it, that a team has just turned over all brand new offensive linemen. I actually think it's going to look very similar to how Chicago looked. The Bears had four new offensive linemen last year, and for the first 4 weeks was just absolutely atrocious. And then week five to, you know, the end of the season, they were able to, like, simplify things, turn things around, and get a little bit better. So I kind of have a feeling it might go that way. I don't know. I don't know to the level. The Bears had more talent on that offensive line than what the Browns have, but it'll look better. I think the first 4 weeks is going to be pretty bad, though. So Judkins might be in like an Ashton Gentry of last year, or even a Judkins of last year type scenario, where the offensive line just doesn't do him any favors, and that might have to be his reality. They got good guys. Spencer Fano, obviously top 10 pick at left tackle. We'll see what happens there, but it's just, I mean, this was just haphazardly put together. It's one of the few concerns that if you want to tell me that the season just goes absolutely sideways for reasons outside of the quarterback, that I have to pay attention to.
Last thing for you, Jonathan, before we let you go. The defense, there are a lot of names to like there, and obviously no Myles Garrett anymore, but they get Jared Verse back. How good would you expect the defense to be this year?
It's that, again, another one of those things where it's like they could be 15th. They could also be, maybe in the Miles drop-off isn't that large. Jared Verse has been phenomenal. I need to make that abundantly clear. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happens with losing Jim Schwartz, though. I don't. Rutenberg, the new DC, I just don't know how that's going to go. And so I would bet better than not they're around league average. I don't think they're going to be dominant, but Jared Verse has been phenomenal in camp. You still have Schlesinger. Denzel Ward's still one of the best players in the sport for a reason. They just paid Grant Delpit a lot of money. Like, there are so many good players on this defense. Depth is going to be an issue, but there's so many good starters on this team.
And Ward signed an extension, right? So, like, he's if they're bad during the year, he's not going anywhere?
Yeah, no, he's gonna be here. Now, the out on that, essentially, is basically not this year, but probably next year. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to go shopping for Denzel Ward, that'd probably be when you could do it.
Jonathan Peterlin, 92.3 The Fan, at Jay Peterlin on Twitter. Thanks, Jonathan, as always. Always appreciate the time.
All right, thanks, Joe. Appreciate you.
Bills and Browns joined practice at 1:20 today. Kind of an odd start time.
Yeah, a little bit, right?
If you say 1:20, I'm expecting you to start on the dot at 1:20. I showed up 10 minutes late, 1:30. You should have said 1:30 then.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it might be people start trickling in around 1:20, warm-up start, and then maybe, you know.
Look, if I hear 1:22 start time, that's starting at 1:22 on the nose.
That's what
baseball
does.
If I hear 1:30, I feel like it could be 1:35. It could be 1:40.
Right.
Be...
That's baseball versus any other sport when we talk about start times.
Yeah.
Like the NFL is like, oh, the NHL even sometimes is late. Right. And then you have baseball, it's 7:07.
Yeah.
First pitch.
We also got spoiled by the World Cup this summer.
They were right on time, too.
Right on time most of the time. So that was nice.
You guys want some trivia?
Absolutely.
Oh, sure.
All right. Put your thinking caps on. It's 8:17. We got, you know, a couple hours warmed up here.
Yeah.
The Browns are one of a few teams that are going to have a different week one starting quarterback from last year to this year. I'm not going to ask you, though, to name the teams with different starting quarterbacks. Can you give me, I believe it's 7 quarterbacks that started week one last season that will not be starting week one this season?
Oh.
Ooh, okay, so the guys that started last year that won't this year.
Correct.
Okay.
That's really good.
Well, Tua's going to start in Atlanta. It has to be.
That's a good catch.
Tua will start in Atlanta.
It can't be a guy that isn't right. Okay.
No, it's just who's not starting.
Yeah.
Who started week one last year
retired?
Quarterback wise, I don't know. Rodgers is still playing.
Rodgers is there.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the other old guys? Tennessee's the same.
Will Levis?
A list of teams will always be good here.
Yeah, that's actually a great idea.
Will Levis got hurt before last year and missed the whole season.
Ward was the whole season for them, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Who played for Jaden Daniels to start last season?
Mariota, was it?
Mariota?
So Daniels started week one.
Did he start the year? Yeah, okay. Man.
Who started this year? J.J. McCarthy.
Correct.
Wow, thank you.
J.J. McCarthy will not be starting week one this year. They won against Chicago where he brought them back at the end, and then he had that locker room speech, and everyone was like, oh, look at this guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. With his
Of him where he's like,
yeah,
the 9 photo.
Yeah.
He threw for 140 yards in that game, and everyone got all excited.
Flacco started for Cleveland, right?
Correct.
Good one
Joe Flacco. Who is now the Bengals' backup.
Love that for him.
Give me the Jets.
Yeah.
Who was there? Fields.
Justin Fields.
Correct. Justin Fields, now Kansas City's backup, started week one for the Jets last year. They lost by 2 to Pittsburgh.
Murray's in Minnesota now.
Yeah, but
Kyler.
He's the starter now, yeah.
Oh, right, but he's a starter now, so he's going to start.
He's going to start.
Right. Doesn't count. Mm-hmm. Same as my two, I guess.
Did Jackson Dart start last year, or was that Jameis Winston?
Ooh, good call.
Dart? Did he start last year?
Winston.
Dart did not start week one last year. He's not the right answer because he will be starting.
He will be starting.
This year.
Yeah. Yeah. If he got the wires crossed.
If he doesn't take a head hit between now and then.
Right. So, oh no, it wasn't Jameis Winston. It was Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson. There we go. We got there.
He's retired.
Yes. And right. That's my old guy.
He's on the desk.
Yeah. Where did he go?
CBS, I believe. CBS Sports.
Man, that sounds.
Where? Horrible. In the booth or on the desk?
I think on the desk with like Nate Burleson, those guys, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. All right, he's replacing Matt Ryan.
Right.
Because Matt Ryan's running the Falcons now.
Yeah.
All right. He's not going to be good on TV. or you know what? Maybe he will be good on TV because he'll be so strange that it's good.
He's going to say something he's going to be a repeater in shots of audio.
It'll be like a Jason Garrett style. Like, oh, look at this strange bird staring into the camera all weirdly.
Yeah.
And
I can't
stand
him.
Jason Garrett or Russell Wilson?
No, Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson.
I can't stand either of them. Has Jason Garrett grown on you
a
little bit? He's better. He's better than he was.
But because of this point, I'm like, he's so weird to me on TV that it's so robotic that it's funny.
It's better. Listen to him this year. He's less robotic than he used to be.
You think? Mm-hmm.
Somebody has coached him up big time.
Spencer Rattler.
Correct.
Great.
That just popped in my brain. Sorry. Right in the middle of that conversation.
Awesome. That's good.
He started week one for New Orleans last year.
Right. Yes, because the Bills played him. That was before Tyler Shuck took over. Yes.
He went 1-7.
Yes.
And then Shuck took over and had a winning record the rest of the season.
There's another NFC guy that I
know I'm
feel
staring
like
at this picture of every NFL team just
there
casing
is
it.
NFC guy.
I should have got this when I said Tua. Penix.
Michael Penix.
Penix started for them last
year. Kirk Cousins started, didn't he? Or was that Penix last
Penix.
Year?
No, Penix.
Oh, the year before was Cousins. That's right.
Right. So Penix is correct.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you guys got him. Let me double check here.
Has nobody else I can think of right now.
Yeah, no, that's it. Because
we said
you got Fields. That was the one I didn't mark down.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, yeah, Fields.
So that is the list. Geno Smith is still a starter, just in a different team.
Right,
Tua.
Tua on a different team.
Kyler, new team.
Kyler, new team.
Yep.
Who else, new team? Anyone?
That might be it for new team.
Bryce Young somehow made
Kirk
it
Cousins.
To another season. Cousins did not start week one last year.
Right.
Oh, and not last year.
He was in.
He's technically said to be starting, apparently, week one for the Raiders. But.
Who is the favorite to have a different starting quarterback week one next season? Cleveland?
Browns. Well,
they'll definitely have a new one.
Pittsburgh.
Well, especially, we just heard from Jonathan. Like, they're going to go Watson, and Watson's not starting week one next season.
No.
Of course not.
So,
Even though he wants that extension, he's
if
not.
It was Sanders, like, okay, maybe there's a chance.
Right.
But Cleveland will be on that list.
Pittsburgh's a guarantee, like you said, Owen, mm-hmm. because Rodgers is done after this season.
Gotta do it.
I agree that they would be another favorite here.
How likely is it that Murray sticks around in Minnesota?
I think there's a good chance of that.
I do too.
I think he sticks.
Tampa Bay. Baker.
See, I don't think that one, though, because if they lose him, if they don't lose him, if they can't figure out a deal, they will franchise tag him.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Yeah,
so
right.
He will still be there.
Tua will not be the Atlanta starter.
That's correct. It sounds like they are being forced to play Tua because that's literally what the insiders are saying.
Yeah.
They're going to have to play Tua in week one. That's not a ringing endorsement. And he was horrible in the preseason opener. And yesterday, all the Falcons beat reporters like, you got to see how bad he was today.
I read somebody, the description was like, I don't know how you write that in like, keep covering that team. It was so like this guy.
So how do you walk
this
back
guy
into that locker room?
So bad. Like there's like a writer saying, like, I don't know what's happening. It's unbelievable that he's playing quarterback in the NFL right now.
Do the Texans switch up starting quarterback next season? The
Stroud,
Panthers.
It's a good one
with Bryce Young.
How about Cam Ward I know me and you, Sneaky, have been on the Cam Ward train, but it's not going well for us.
Yeah, I think with Daboll.
It's preseason, you know?
Yeah, we're just talking about Tua, though, and he's having like the same preseason as
true, Tua. But Tua, we've seen bad longer.
There's no game planning in the preseason. I think you got to wait until week one to really get a taste of what they're going to look like against defenses.
I'll die on the Cam Ward train. I think there's something there.
I do, too.
There's something there.
I'm with you, but it's been
especially with Daboll, and if they build a team around, I think there's a chance there.
Here's the thing, because of the quarterback class being what it is, any team that has a bad year, it's going to be a lot easier next season than it was this season to make the switch. Right. This year, when you're not in position to take a great young quarterback in the first round because there aren't any, then sticking with your guy is easier to do. When there are a bunch of great ideas in the first round, and if you're Tennessee, you don't even have to pick first. If you win six games and you're picking eighth, and that's where the fourth quarterback is going to go out of six first-round guys, guess what is going to be a lot easier this year than last year? Oh, we can move off Cam Ward because Trinidad Chambliss is going to go ninth. Right. Or pick your name, CJ Carr, whoever it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
The Sellers, the South Carolina kid.
Right.
And that could be – that's where I think this could be a lot of teams. The Raiders, by the way, will have a different starter just because if Cousins gets week one this year, Mendoza will get week one next year.
Right, right.
That's like a backdoor entry here. Yeah. I think the Saints are going to be the same guy.
Shuck.
I like Shuck.
I do too.
I'd be more confident Shuck gets week one next year than Cam Ward gets week one next year.
Yeah,
I
gotta say about this Shuck thing that's happening. It feels like everybody is like on Shuck being great now, and like it was half a season in New Orleans, and like that division. I don't know. I'm not saying he's gonna be bad, but everyone's like seems very much
he might not be their franchise
ready
starter.
To proclaim him as being awesome.
Yeah,
and like I don't know. Do we know that already about him?
Awesome,
good. I
don't good.
Know that I'm ready to do that with him.
I like that he's big, he's got an arm, and he runs.
Yeah.
And more, it feels like he only went in the second round because he's old.
Right.
And if he was 23 instead, if he was 22 instead of 25 when he was drafted, that he would have been a first-round pick.
Okay.
That's my Tyler Shuck defense. I'm not sure he'll be incredible. You know, he'll be Derek Carr.
Yeah.
But he can move. He can scoot a little bit.
Okay.
That gets you to the next year.
Definitely Derek Carr gets you to the next year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So I think
it's been a love affair for Tyler Shuck all offseason, and I just don't. I didn't watch I didn't watch all the Saints snaps, but like I wasn't like, wow, look at this kid every time I watched him, which was enough that I remember him.
I think it was just such
a
stark contrast.
He also isn't a kid.
No,
right.
That's very true.
He turns 27 during the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It was just such a stark contrast from Spencer Rattler. I think it really amplified the hype train there.
Right.
Shuck turns 27 September 28th.
Wow.
Wow.
I mean, is Sam Darnold younger than that?
Right.
Sam Darnold's
not by
be
much. No, 29. He just turned 29.
Yeah, it's not.
Did you say Arizona?
Absolutely
new quarterback.
Oh, yeah. Percent? Yeah.
1,000% new quarterback next year. And the Rams.
Would it be Ty Simpson?
You got to consider it because we don't know the timeline on Stafford. He's had back problems in the past. He is fine now and is still incredible. But how much longer does he want to play? That's going to be totally up to him, right? Like, if they win the Super Bowl and he rides off into the sunset, like, that's not going to be stunning. Or if he just takes a bad hit and the back flares up again and he doesn't want to do it anymore because he's 38 years old, that also wouldn't be crazy.
Right.
And they already have the next guy.
Right.
And they probably would be fine waiting 2 years with him, 3 years with him even, if Stafford wants to keep going and keep playing well. That's a year-to-year thing. Like that could be next year where Simpson is the guy.
Yeah, didn't they do something weird with his contract to, like, it's kind of got like an out?
Stafford?
Yeah, like they did something, I think, early
I think
in
they
the extend.
It was like 1 year or something
gave
like
him
that.
One
that's
year
it.
With, like, an option at the end of that year or something. Like something yeah. where you're like, you know, they know that he doesn't know yet, basically, was my, you know, understanding of what they did.
It does look like they can get out of it next year.
Yeah.
he retires and they need to do something right about it. 803-0550 is the phone number. Shots of audio when we come back. And we've got a Packers guest coming up at 9. We've been working through the Bills schedule. Not gotten to Green Bay yet. Sunday night, week 14. That'll be at 9. But shots of audio when we return here on Jeremy and Joe. This is WGR.
Play action from Mendoza, and he comes back over the middle, and he's picked off. Wood as the rookie. Mendoza trying to track him down and cannot. Pick six.
Raiders and Texans last night. The player there, Wade Woodaz. What a name. In the spirit of so many college players seemingly tweaking their name pronunciations as they get to the NFL, this player's a rookie. You got to change that to Woodaz, I think. Let's just live a little here. Wade Woodaz. I watched some of it. I had the Raiders. I thought the Texans starters weren't supposed to play. Stroud, right down the field. Woody Marks. I mean, I don't know if he's going to be that relevant, but 7-0, and then Raiders come back the other way. Mike Washington, by the way, kind of a story of the preseason, gets brought down after a big run. Then you had that, and then it's pretty much over, 14-0. Wade Woodaz. We're sticking with that? Why Devon Achane ever had to move off of Achane? Way cooler. I don't know. Now we've got Travis and Trevor Etienne, who are now, they're calling it closer to HN. I'm thinking it's more like Etienne. I have my pronunciation hangups. Enough about that. Here's an easy name to say. Sam Paniatovich with us on the West Her Hotline. Well, I was thinking this way last week, and I haven't heard different today. Have you settled at all since a few weeks here of running around like a crazy person?
Well, I have breaking news, if I may, Mike.
Please.
I was going to, as glasses guys, you know this, we don't have a cloth. We usually just use our shirt or our polo, whatever we're wearing. So I went to clean a smudge off the glasses about 3 hours ago at work, and the glasses cracked right down the middle. So the backup pair is in the moving truck that is still barreling from Boston to Chicago. So I'm going black tape over the glasses for the next couple of days, I guess. Just a fantastic start to a Friday.
Better than going without the glasses. You can't go without the glasses, so you're going black tape.
I can't see without the glasses, Mike, and I don't have contacts because I can't touch my eye. Like, I was at the doctor many years ago, and it's a funny story, actually. I was sitting there in the chair, and they go, "Well, touch your eye." And I can't because my reflexes are very, very strong. So they had the doctor and the doctor assistant holding my arms down in the chair while I tried to touch my eye with the other eye. And I'm like, unless you two come over to my house every morning, this is not going to fly.
Absolute torture.
Yeah, like, if you're both going to come assist me every morning to put my contacts in and take my contacts out, that's fine. But if you watch Fox Chicago tonight, you will see a piece of black tape over the crown that holds both sets together. So it's a wonderful life, Mike.
Come on, that's a major market. They don't have stacks of glasses in the back for these kind of situations. I mean, I don't know if you're nearsighted or farsighted or what, but they've got to have some sort of other plan for you than the black tape plan, I would hope. No?
Well, we tried the Gorilla Glue, and it wouldn't connect because it was a clean break right down the middle. So then we did the black tape, and then sort of created a cocoon and then jammed the Gorilla Glue inside. Nobody outside of this conversation cares, but yeah, that's where we're at today, Mike.
Maybe, but I'm riveted, so I don't know if that's true. How tough a shape are you in without the glasses? Like, how bad is it?
Oh, God, I couldn't tell the difference between a male and a female without glasses.
So, I mean, you're a young guy. This has probably been true most of your life.
Yes.
I had the 2020 thing for most of my life, and I ended up in I don't know if it was my primary or even wasn't an eye doctor yet because I didn't have one. And somebody said, you know, when you turn 50, it's inevitable. You will need glasses. I'm like, well, I never heard that before. I thought I had great vision. I thought it was like sort of losing your hair. Like, maybe I won't. So there it was, right when I turned 50. So like 5 years ago, okay, yeah, I really can't see anymore. And I'm on the stream on Tuesday night, Sam, for ADP Chasing. And sometimes I will just take the, because I have to sort of tilt my head to read the screen the way my setup works, and I'll just take them off because it's the same thing. If I don't do this with my glasses, I won't see them. I won't see the screen anyway. So yeah, I need them too to be able to read. And my wife is the opposite. I can't borrow her glasses because she takes hers off to read. How about that craziness?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm sort of cooked, and there's a really good chance, because I'm anchoring tonight at 5 o'clock. So there's a really good chance that mid read, the one side of the glasses slides out of the gorilla glued cocoon, and I am not sure what I'm going to do. I don't know if you saw the video of me last week doing the beer bong. Like I don't have a beer bong to bail me out for humor. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, you got to come up with something. I'll try to keep this relatively short so you have time to make contingency plans. What, betting-wise, what's on your mind right now? Last week we did NFL stat leaders. I just ran through another 18 division winner parlay. That's really fun. You can get to some big numbers pretty easily without betting too many real long shots. I didn't even try your Tennessee Titans when I did this exercise a few minutes ago, but, you know, maybe I'll go back to it. Football, I mean, pro or college, baseball, Premier League, where are you focused?
Well, I'm gobbling up Arch Manning stock left and right, and I think that there's still, I mean, for those of you driving around, well, then again, you can't even bet the Heisman in New York, can you?
No.
Oh, bummer. I personally, though, keep adding Arch Manning at anything north of 8-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. Of course, he's the nephew of Peyton and Eli. And he was the consensus favorite this time last year. And I remember I was in Vegas for Bet Bash, and one of the casinos in Vegas had him at plus 550. And I thought, that's just never going to get my money, because he's never really been a full-time starter. He started a couple games, I think, when Quinn Ewers got hurt the year before, but he was coming in as the starter. And I thought, I'm never betting that at plus 550. And most books like DraftKings, FanDuel, BetMGM had about 6-1, 6.25. And he struggled early, as one does in the SEC, right? and they started against Ohio State, and right. He was not ready. And it was a tough early part of the season, but he got really good at the end. And go look at Arch Manning's box score down the stretch. So you have the full season of seasoning. You have a better offensive line. You have better wide receivers via the portal. And you have a year under the system. So he's a better quarterback on a better team. And guess what? There's an 8-1. There's a plus 850 at FanDuel. What am I missing? I get the same player who's better, more seasoned, and I get $2.50 more. Rather than 6-1 last summer, now I get plus 800, plus 850. What am I missing?
Well, there is an answer to that, right? I don't know what it is. What is it? Some, is it another player? Another player is in a better situation as well? What is the reason for that?
Well, CJ Carr is favored. He's the Notre Dame quarterback who many are saying could be a first overall pick, but so could Arch. Mm-hmm. And Carr's really good. I mean, he was a stud last year as a freshman, took Notre Dame to a position where they probably should have gotten in the playoff. My thing, though, is, you know, Carr is great. Arch is great. Manning faces the toughest schedule in the country. You ask a bookmaker who's got the toughest schedule, the answer is Texas, 8 out of 10 guys. So if they go 10-2, make the playoff at Texas, he's winning the Heisman. And he's a dual threat guy, right? He can throw, he can run, he can throw on the run. He's a really special player. And I think, you know, the name does everything. I think it's a really good bet to make right now. And understand, I'm not somebody who says this every summer. Oh, let's bet the guy near the top of the board. Like, usually when I bet the Heisman, I'm looking 20-1, 30-1, 40-1. I want to find the guy that the market isn't up on, or maybe, you know, isn't fully grasping how good they could be. I've never been a guy to bet somebody near the top. So Carr is 7-1. Arch is like 8-1, 850. I'm betting Arch because I think he's going to come out gangbusters. And I think there's a good chance by October, he's 3-1 or 4-1. Now understand, the favorite, the Heisman favorite in the summer has not won since Marcus Mariota. That's over 10 years ago. Now, Arch technically is not the favorite. He's the second favorite. But that's where I'm at. And I know Zach Jones, your producer, like, I know him hearing me talk about that, it probably excites him a bit, but it also probably terrifies him a bit, because now I'm throwing this into the atmosphere.
Well, it's good that he's not the favorite, at least, for that streak. What about teams And whether that's the playoff or the national championship, are you going likewise with Texas or what?
No, I don't like Texas to win the whole thing. The playoff is so weird because, like, you know, these teams that have great regular seasons, and I think Texas will be just fine. These teams that have a bye in the playoff, man, are 1-7 in the playoff. Isn't that crazy? Including, I believe, the first year of the playoff where every team that had a bye lost. So it's tough to sort of navigate the playoff given the new, you know, 12-team format and the teams all getting the bye. So here's a team that I really do like this year, though, and you can get plus money on this over. It's the Minnesota Golden Gophers.
What?
I know. I only on Shope and the Bulldog will you hear this, I promise. We're not here talking about
LSU.
You
have your glasses on?
Yeah, my glasses are on, and okay. They're taped.
Okay.
I know taped. Everybody wants to talk about Oregon and Ohio State and Texas and you name it. Minnesota is going to win 8 or 9 games this year, and their win total is 6.5. Depending on the book, it's either +25, +130, or +132 to go over that 6.5. We need 7 wins. I think they're going to get 8 or 9. The schedule is very doable. They have a swing game against Mississippi State, week 2, which I think they're going to win. And they are one of 12 teams in the country that bring back head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and the starting quarterback. There's a ton of stability there. They also have a guy named Anthony Smith who might be the best defensive end in the Big Ten. Just a monster in terms of getting at the quarterback. He led the Big Ten in sacks last year. So there's a lot to like there. I saw PJ Fleck at Big Ten Media Day here in Chicago. They are very, very optimistic about this season. And here's the list of teams, by the way. 12 teams, like I said. Head coach, OC, wow. DC, quarterback. Arizona, Boise State, Charlotte, Delaware, Florida Atlantic, Georgia, Houston, Minnesota, NC State, New Mexico, Notre Dame, Oklahoma. Those are 12 teams. Because of everything they bring back, I will look to bet individually as well in the first couple of weeks of the season.
How crazy is it that there are only 12 such teams? It's just like it's 4 positions. Everybody's running around. These are not even the players except for quarterback. And mm-hmm. still, there's that kind of craziness there. Minnesota, September 3rd, so 2 weeks from maybe tomorrow, they open with Eastern Illinois, -43.5.
I'd probably lay it before I take it, but mm-hmm. I did not get invested yet. I'll tell you the one bet I am going to make. I'm going to take, we were talking about this on Bear Bets, Oklahoma plays UTEP. That's the first, I believe it's week 1, not week 0. Mm-hmm. And with a total of 49, the spread is 42. So they're basically saying 42.
45.5 to 3.5.
Well, here's what's going to happen. It's going to be 45-0, and UTEP will have the ball at the 3-yard line with 2 seconds to go.
Let's go.
And they're going to throw a fade into the corner. We're going to need some backup to
let's go
to slip on a banana peel at Oklahoma. But they're going to, at that point, they're going to be craving the shutout. That's exactly what's going to happen. You know it, and I know it. We're going to need a touchdown on the final play.
It's almost here. All this excitement is almost here. Next week there are games. Did you happen to take note of St. Louis Cincinnati yesterday in baseball?
I didn't see a single pitch. What happened?
Sam, it's 4-0 Cardinals into the 7th. It might have been the 6th. 4-0 Cardinals at the Reds. Reds get 5 in the inning. Top of the 9th, 2 out, 2 on. Reds up 5-4. Dropped fly ball for 2 runs. St. Louis gets 4 more. 10-5. Cincinnati gets 4 back, loads the bases, flies out to the wall to end it.
Oh.
And I was thinking about a -1.5 better on St. Louis. Just like, we got it, we're dead, we got it, we lost. One of those kind of games that you might more often see in other sports. But that was kind of a tough one for that person. If you could get St. Louis -1.5 yesterday, probably could.
I have no issue with people betting baseball. I think watching baseball, especially when you have a bet on it, is terrifying. And one of my buddies, Nick Bogdanovich, who's worked in Vegas for decades, he famously gave the line on a radio show once. He said, if you want to bet and watch baseball, I just combined bet and watch to betch.
Yep.
If you'd like to betch baseball, Mike,
mm-hmm.
you need a bottle of whiskey and a revolver. And I thought, well, maybe that's a little dramatic,
yeah,
but man, I mean, the swings in baseball games sometimes, man, they're unfathomable.
I don't even really know why I did it, but I had Neto to hit a home run last night, and he did. And he drove in 7 runs which I didn't have over 6.5 RBIs, if that was even something you could get.
But you're about that action, Mike. That's what it's all about. By the way,
I am.
By the way, guess what happens this weekend for us?
Oh, wow. The White Sox and the Mets?
Well, the White Sox are on 66.
Oh,
I imagine either tonight, tomorrow, or Sunday, we're going to get that 67th win, and I have a bunch of people from WGR that are messaging me every time the White Sox win, because we need one more win to get over that win total. What a horrible number that was in Vegas. 66.5. They're going to get there this weekend.
Awesome. All I have is the playoffs at 20 to win 250.
That's a good bet, Mike. You're
pretty good.
You're favored to win the division right now. They should get there.
Huge favorite. All right, Sam, anything else? I mean, good luck with your glasses. How long was this going to take to get the next ones?
My eye insurance hasn't kicked in yet with the new job, so that'll be fun to go get an eye exam, because I can't take an old eye exam to get a new pair of glasses. So it's a whole cluster. I can't wait to see how this unfolds.
It could be kind of funny if intentionally you sat down to do your sports report and couldn't see and just sort of winged it. You know, I don't know if your boss would like it or find it amusing, but you know, if you meant to do it, it might be funny. Hey, my glasses just broke.
I assure you, I did not. I need these to survive.
All right. Thanks for today. Enjoy your weekend. Bulldog back with me next week as we get closer to real games.
Fantastic. Good to talk to you, Mike.
You too, Sam. Sam Paniadovich on the Western Hotline, Fox, Chicago. Three games tonight in the preseason. Jets, Steelers, Panthers, Jaguars, and Packers, Broncos. Two last night. I saw some of the Raiders. That pick six play, Wudaz, come on, let's fix that. And then Dejon Stribling for San Francisco. That's a fantasy question for our next guest, Ian Harditz, no doubt. What are we going to do with Dejon Stribling? Pick 33, just like Keon Coleman, 2 years ago, San Francisco, I mean, that was not a name. We talk about wide receiver before drafts in here every day. We never got to Dejon Stribling, but in the preseason so far, he's been killer. So that and more from Ian Harditz coming up in about 16 minutes. I'm Mike Shope. Thanks for listening. This is WGR.